a lot of women will start to get into insulin resistance with different hormone issues, and that's where we can see like weight loss being a block. What's interesting is we produce this DHEA from the adrenal glands, and it goes through a process to break down, and it actually is what produces our testosterone. So meat isn't the issue, it's the seed oils.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. I have been on this wonderful health journey with the fantastic Amber Romaniak, and I'm so glad she is back. We're going to be talking about blood work and the results of my blood work. And I know that some of this information, even though it doesn't apply directly to you, will still be of interest because you're going to get to hear why these things are important, why these ranges are important, all that good stuff. Amber, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to go through this today. This is important for everybody to hear because I've never had a woman not have hormone imbalances or some kind of deficiency. So it's going to be great insight for everybody today.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So what is going on?
Are you ready to just dive right in? Yes.
Okay. I know. I'm dying.
Yeah. Okay. So first, let's go through the things. And thank you for sending everything over to me. Let's go through the things that looked really good first, and I'll just touch briefly on them, and then we'll go to the things that need a little bit of love. The things that I was like, oh, okay, that's awesome, is your fasting insulin's really good, so like no issues there. So a lot of women will start to get into insulin resistance with different hormone issues, and that's where we can see like weight loss being a block, blood sugar issues, diabetic stuff. So it's just great, always good to rule out any issues with insulin. Your iron looks really good, and of course we need iron for energy. And the other really important connection is ferritin. So ferritin is actually the original form of iron before it's broken down and goes through a bunch of processes in the body to convert into iron to give us energy and oxygenate the blood. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes iron will just be tested, but then people will feel tired, and then we do the ferritin test, and if that's low, then that will contribute to fatigue. Okay. So the good news is your ferritin levels are really good. Oftentimes when I have a client who has any kind of thyroid issue, we can see low ferritin. So it's good that your levels are really, really awesome.
I'm good.
And then all your other like iron, essentially like through the process to which ferritin goes from iron, all those other numbers look really good. Your testosterone levels are really good. So happy to see that. It was at a 34. The range is 2 to 45. I find especially like in the 50s or the 60s, like that, just slightly over the mid-range is a really good place to be. We do need enough testosterone. And a lot of people don't realize, but we actually produce a hormone in the adrenal glands called DHEA. I'm not going to try to pronounce the long name because I always butcher it. yeah, it's fun. It's like a 50-letter word. It's crazy. But what's interesting is we produce this DHEA from the adrenal glands, and it goes through a process to break down, and it actually is what produces our testosterone. One converts into the other. So what's interesting is your testosterone levels are really good, but your DHEA is a little bit low. So DHEA, and this is where I'm curious to see your cortisol, because when cortisol is too high or too low, and we'll just wait and see what it says, but I find we'll see lower DHEA because the adrenal glands start to get tired and fatigued and have trouble producing as much. And so when we start to see a bit of a lower DHEA, this is tied to energy levels, weight gain, sex drive, things like that. So if you're, you know, and these levels will naturally drop into perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. But we still want to make sure that they are ample enough so that you have good energy, good sex drive, and it's not inhibiting any weight loss that we want to see.
Right. Now I am post-menopause. Yeah. So is that number still too low for being
post-menopause? Oftentimes if we see quite a low value of DHEA, I find the easiest thing to do is supplement with DHEA.
Oh, okay.
And it helps to build the levels up a little bit. And yeah, you can just get in a supplement form. Ideally, what I would suggest is 25 milligrams a day with breakfast. And it's just going to help build the levels up a little bit more, which I think is important, like I said, for the mental clarity, energy, weight, sex drive stuff. And it's the same with like postmenopausal or going through that phase and getting on HRT. Like it's needed sometimes. Why would you want to feel like absolute garbage going through the process? Like we want to keep some level of our hormones so that we can feel optimal, right? Of course, there's other things sometimes that women can get on, like yam creams and things like that. They don't want to do HRT. the support is important to consider if you're extremely depleted.
Right.
So we're going to work on the DHEA. I will send you a note for that, and then you can pick it up where you feel called. But I'll make sure that it's in the recommendations that I sent over to you. So that was one of the first things that I saw that was just like, it's not bad, but it's just an imbalance that I think will definitely feel the difference when you, when you do it. Okay. But testosterone levels look really good. So I was happy to see that. If we go to your, I know like the doctor did all your electrolytes and the CBC and all that. So you usually don't necessarily go through all the CBC stuff, the complete blood count. But obviously we want to look at things and make sure that there's no elevated white blood cell count because that's signs of infections, right? So that's all good. But when I was looking at your electrolytes, so your sodium's really good, your chloride. So you have good levels of electrolytes in the body, which is always really important. If we are depleted in our electrolytes, things like potassium, chloride, sodium, calcium, the only thing I didn't see was magnesium, but when we have lower electrolytes, this can cause lower energy because the system needs these electrolytes to function optimally. And so that's why I say one of the easiest things is honestly just to use pink or gray sea salt, Celtic sea salt, or like electrolyte powder in your water. And that's an easy way to replenish your minerals and electrolytes because we pee a lot of it out. If stress is high, if cortisol is high, or if you've had any bout of like loose stools for some reason, it's just we will deplete ourselves so fast. So that's a really easy way to get energy.
On my grass-fed steak and on my vegetables every day.
Well, not every day. That's great. Steak,
a lot of days.
Oh, gotta love a good steak.
Yes.
So yeah, that was all looking really good. Your blood glucose is also really good. So blood sugar stuff, awesome. No issues at all, which I think is really important to always be checking in on. Everyone, when you go for your annual test or your physical or you go to see your doctor, request to see glucose, request to see fasting insulin on your requisition. Just it's good stuff to like, it's like pre, you know, just making sure you're preventing, I guess is the word, right?
So all now, I just wanted to ask about my cholesterol, which is 231, which of course in the mainstream, they, you know, I'm listed as high, but what did you think of that?
The good news is just to touch on the other, like your HDL is good. Your LDL is a little high as well. So to me, like this isn't like a big thing. I think the biggest thing though is to look at, okay, well, why is the cholesterol elevated? Right. So, the things that come to mind are things like and I'm not saying you're doing this, but the things I was like to check in on that people can ask themselves, am I drinking enough water? Because if you're not getting 2+ liters a day or 68 ounces plus a day, and you're dehydrated and you're not moving your bowels daily and you have constipation, you're going to reabsorb that cholesterol and your levels go up more easily. Eating enough fiber with your meal. So fruit, veggies, nuts, seeds, whole grains like brown rice, quinoa, amaranth, buckwheat. Fiber binds excess cholesterol to it in our bowels and then we eliminate it. So we need to make sure we're eating enough fiber with our meals along with proteins and fats because we have to remember we produce cholesterol. And so if the numbers are going up, there's an excess buildup in the body. So what's creating it? So part of it is poor bowel health. Part of it is inflammation. So the more inflamed we are because we have gut health issues, our liver isn't functioning properly and is overburdened. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of unhealthy candida overgrowth. These things can all contribute to cholesterol levels building up in the body.
What about the fact that I eat a lot of meat? I mean, or is that too many?
Here's the sham. It's not the meat. It's the seed oils. So meat isn't the issue. It's the seed oils. Like, so we've been sold a lie that it's the meat. It's not. It's not the eggs either. Because people are like, oh, eggs are high in cholesterol. And it's like, the eggs are not are causing the issue. It's all the sugar too. Refined sugar, corn syrup, seed oils, aspartame, margarine. This is the stuff that's causing the issue. So we've been, it's essentially whatever the mainstream is telling you and pushing, it's the opposite.
Okay. So I've cut down a lot on my seed oils, just on certain things, but not, I'm not like eating them every day once in a while.
Which I think moderation, right? But so to me, it's like the hydration. It's, you know, you could do something like chia seeds and put them in your food where it would make sense to, or make a little chia pudding because anything with a lot of fiber is going to bind and help with that excess cholesterol. I think too, like, because you drink lots of water, right? So we don't have to worry about that. Your bowels are moving daily.
Yes.
Okay, good. So I mean, the other thing that could contribute a little bit is the C-reactive protein, which we will touch on.
Right.
Because if we do have elevated inflammation in the body, it just, there's just certain things that will can kind of like accumulate and build up. We
Right.
also can have high cholesterol because of magnesium deficiency. Now, we didn't get a magnesium result back.
No,
but to me,
okay.
one of the best things you could do is supplement with magnesium at bedtime. And that
okay.
boosting up your magnesium levels, not only does it help with sleep, but it if there is a deficiency with magnesium that is contributing to the cholesterol, that would also be helpful. So we can do that as well.
Okay.
I'm just thinking if there's anything else to suggest for that. I think, so there's also, I forgot to mention this, there's a connection between thyroid function and your cholesterol levels. So for women who are hypothyroid, underactive thyroid, or have Hashimoto's, there's usually more of a connection or higher chance of having elevated cholesterol levels.
Mm-hmm.
So working on your thyroid function, and it's not just taking medication. It's actually how do we get the antibodies down, and we'll see what those tests say, but how do we make sure your thyroid is functioning optimally, and how do we get the inflammation down in the body, which inhibits thyroid function?
Right.
And as
and
we
you
do
have,
that also helps the cholesterol. Yeah, we'll go through the thyroid
okay,
test
yeah,
for sure.
Curious.
I have it all. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, good.
But just to touch on like the significance of cholesterol. It's not just about hopping on a medication. It's like, well, what's at the root of
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, these imbalances, right? So
right.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of different things that we can do, but like avocados, raw nuts and seeds, you're like anything blue or purple is great for antioxidants and again, rich
okay.
in fiber. So making sure you're having good bowel movements, hydration, reducing any chance of a magnesium deficiency with magnesium and,
okay.
and us just making sure your thyroid is functioning optimal
mm-hmm.
should do the trick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. But yeah, I wanted to explain that because most people are like, oh yeah, it's high, so I should eat less meat or eat less eggs. And it's like, no, there's so many other things to look at. So I just want to make sure. Okay, so covered all that. Oh, another thing that was deficient is your vitamin D. So you're very deficient in vitamin D.
Yeah, so I started doubling my dose because I do take it every day.
Right. So how much were you taking?
2,000.
Oh, it's no, way too little. It's
4,
not enough. 000. It's
going
to take forever.
Taking?
So just to read your number, so you're 25, which is extremely low. It should be at least 70 to 80.
Oh, wow.
And at 2,000 IU a day, like what you were previously doing, that would, you'd never build it up. It would stay deficient. So ideally what we want to go to is we want to go to 6,000 IU a day.
Okay.
To like really get work on building that level up. It'll take a few months, but we'll get it there. So I'll just make
yeah,
a note to you.
Yeah, summer, I'm out all summer because I have a pool.
Yeah, and here's the irony of it though. You only get about 600 milligrams of vitamin D in the sun all day. So
oh,
you're not
really?
Even going to build it up from that. So you do
oh,
need to supplement
okay.
and then enjoy the sun as much as you can. But it's kind
right.
of a bit of a farce that
no,
just
okay.
spending a lot of time in the sun is going to correct a deficiency like this. It won't. And if
okay.
we're deficient in vitamin D, that can impact our cholesterol. That can impact our mood and our hormones because vitamin D is a fatty like hormone. It almost mimics a fatty like hormone, but
mm-hmm.
it's a vitamin.
Right.
So we're going to do 6,000 IU a day. Are you taking drops or capsules?
A little capsule, like a gel cap kind of thing.
And they're 1,000 IU per capsule?
They're 2,000 per capsule.
Okay, perfect. So take three
take
with
three.
Breakfast per day.
Yes. Okay.
Awesome. Okay, that's an easy shift.
Okay.
I think you're going to notice just even more energy just from that even.
What was the C-reactive protein? Because my doctor marked it as being high, but then
yes.
when I looked at it, it looked like it wasn't high. I was like in
yeah,
the middle.
Yeah, but you can't
the...
trust the normal ranges, right? So like
right.
we talked about, the normal
right.
ranges are too big.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be less than one. So for anyone who's wondering what a good C-reactive protein level is, it should be less than one. Okay, so your C-reactive protein is a 4.8. That's way too high.
Okay.
It needs to be less than one for health function. Once
okay.
it starts to go above a one, you know, into the threes, fours, plus I've seen women at 10 and 20, which like you need to go see someone like ASAP. Ideally, a endocrinologist and or a heart specialist that specializes in both medical but holistic heart health, because when I was, I know a man and he owns a series of clinics called HeartFit Clinic, and his father had a heart attack in his 40s and then had a second one and died in his 40s of a heart attack. And unfortunately, he said the biggest miss in Western medicine is he was going to see his family doctor and they kept doing a stress test. They never tested for C-reactive protein. They never tested for homocysteine and these other markers that really can give us an indication of how much elevated inflammation is going on in the body that is critical, that needs to be, like, you know, taken very seriously, because this level, the longer it's high, can significantly increase our chances of heart issues, stroke, heart disease, heart attacks, autoimmune. Yeah, you don't have to worry. This isn't a fear thing, but it's like, this is why we want to thoroughly do all these tests and see what's going on. And how many people are walking around with elevated C-reactive protein and we'll never know because they never get the test done or don't know what to ask for.
Right.
So oftentimes, if it's elevated, one of the reasons it will be elevated is if we by accidentally get our blood work done while we're sick. I know you weren't sick, but that's the only time we should usually see an elevated C-reactive protein, because it's produced to help us, like, move through whatever's going on. And then it drops back down once we get over whatever we've had.
Right.
But if you take C-reactive protein and it's elevated, we want to look at, okay, well, we already know you have an autoimmune picture. There's Hashimoto's going on. So your thyroid has been in a state where it's attacking itself, right? So anytime anyone already has an autoimmune condition, the likelihood of them having a higher C-reactive protein is higher, especially if they've just gone on medication or haven't really, like, been told or advised what to do to address one of the root causes, which is the chronic inflammation. Just to explain, C-reactive protein is produced by the liver in response to inflammation. Okay, so when we measure this, it's measured via the blood, and it is a marker for specifically inflammation. And if it stays high, it can also contribute to infections, cancers, all kinds of things. A lot of people don't also realize that when it stays high, like I'm talking 10, 20 years, like decades, right? It can indicate that there's inflammation in the arteries of the heart, which that is where my friend who I was talking about earlier that owns these HeartFit clinics was talking about. This is important for us to measure, because if that marker is there, then further testing and investigation can be done to look at that inflammation in the arteries in the heart, because it's a high risk for heart attacks over a long period of time.
So how do I lower that?
So yeah, so we'll talk about that now. The first things to look at are, what are the things that contribute to elevated C-reactive protein? So the most common things that I see are things like poor gut health, candida, poor liver health, eating a lot of seed oils, processed foods, refined sugar, aspartame, MSGs, margarines, aspartame, anything really processed. Because
a lot of any of
what
that.
We have to understand is that the accumulation of eating these things, like seed oils, are one of the most inflammatory things we can be eating, even in moderation when we have elevated C-reactive protein.
Okay.
So we want to talk about, how can we really minimize the intake of those? Because it kind of just adds fuel to the fire and keeps it high. So we have the candida protocol we need to go through, which we can start talking about in your next session.
Okay.
Because when we have a lot of gut bacteria issues, any kind of like gut infections, fungus, parasites, whatever it might be, it fuels inflammation, which then the liver is producing more of this to try and get it sorted out. But when we have chronic infection like yeast or candida, it's not going to just go away. We have to actually walk through a protocol to help it reduce. So that is important. And eating, you know, really well balanced, like we've been talking about, is also very important. For a lot of my clients, they're like, you're good in this case, but a lot of my clients struggle with binging, emotional eating, binging and purging, food addiction. So it's not just as easy as making a couple small changes. Like, there's some massive healing to do with your relationship with food. If you're the chronic people pleaser and you're always overbooked and you're in this state where you literally have no time for yourself and your body's in a heightened state of stress 24/7, that's going to elevate C-reactive protein, high cortisol levels. So we'll see where yours is at. Low vitamin D, low magnesium also can increase chances for high C-reactive protein. So getting your vitamin D up. And like I said, I would supplement with magnesium, even if it's not off much, because it's just going to help with the C-reactive protein to come down.
Okay.
Vitamin C, as well as curcumin. So curcumin is the component of turmeric. That's very bioavailable and very anti-inflammatory. So low curcumin and high dose vitamin C. So ideally getting vitamin C, that's 1,000 IU per capsule. I'm doing a couple of those daily to just help douse out some of this inflammation while we work on some of the other things. I'm going to make some other recommendations as well. But is this making sense so far though? And like I said, it's so good to get it done because there's not really, there's not a lot of blatantly obvious signs that your C-reactive protein are high other than you may be struggling with weight loss. You may have some like mood stuff. You may find you catch it every cold and flu and it takes you a long time to get over it. Or you may feel like you're retaining more water. But there's no like real obvious, like I eat this thing and get bloated, like if you have that issue, right? You get a headache if you have a certain food sensitivity. So it's very kind of, hidden. I find I've seen a lot of women with elevated C-reactive protein who got COVID because, again, like you're fighting off an infection. So there's that as well that I've seen lately in a lot of women. So it may be that you feel like you retain more water. And the weight, like I don't want to plant a seed of disempowerment, but I find with elevated C-reactive protein above a 2, it can take a bit longer to lose the weight because of all this inflammation that's in the blood. So that's why we want to focus on getting a C-reactive protein down, getting your deficiencies with magnesium and B or vitamin D up.
Right.
And get those out of the way. Candida dealt with, and then we'll see what your, we'll see what your cortisol says. There's a couple more things on the C-reactive protein I want to touch on because I like to thoroughly explain this. It's important people really understand like what is going on. And like I said, this is very, very, very important to make sure that everyone's getting tested, especially if you already have an autoimmune condition. And or have like even any risk in the family with heart issues. The other thing that we want to look at is your B12, which is tied to the C-reactive protein as well. So your vitamin B12 is also low.
Yes.
And when we have any kind of vitamin or mineral deficiencies, they will increase our chances of having things like elevated C-reactive protein.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is where we want to sort out any nutrient deficiencies to just like reduce the chances of that C-reactive protein going up. So your B12 is 340. It should be at least 700 to 800. So it's quite deficient. So low B12, B12 is the energy vitamin. So I have to find if it's low. We can have lower energy levels or maybe some brain fog. I can't remember. Are you taking anything for?
Yeah, well, the odd thing is my mainstream doctor actually wrote me a prescription. I take that one or it's a pink pill. It makes me wonder if it's probably not that natural, but I don't know. I mean, I was at least impressed that he tried to do something about it.
Yeah, so I would suggest what we actually do, because here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is they'll just prescribe you B12 or tell you take B12 injections, which you could do. I like B12 injections. No?
I'm really, no. I'd rather not, but if you think it's important.
Well, no, we don't have to do that.
Shot?
Yeah.
Like
so
needle and
so there's two options for this, and there's a faster option and there's a slower option. So it's really dependent on the person. Like I want you to pick whatever you feel comfortable with, but I'll explain both options because it just gives insight, right? With vitamin B12, when we have poor digestion, sometimes it's just going to take longer to take a B complex and B12 together to build the levels up, but it's totally doable. And as we get your gut stronger, you'll absorb better. And the deficiency will resolve, but it's probably going to take at least 6 months to see the B12 levels build up.
Okay.
Also, what's going to be indicative of that is where your cortisol levels are at, because if they're high or too low, you eat through your B12 too fast.
Oh, okay.
So when you're inflamed, you burn through your B vitamins, minerals, everything faster because your body's in a more acidic state and it's trying to get more alkaline, slightly alkaline. With B12, if you just take B12 on its own, you're actually going to deplete all the other B vitamins, B1, B2, B6, B9. There's many different B vitamins. Mm-hmm. And so what they don't tell you is, oh, just take B12, it's fine. But then you're going to deplete all your other Bs and throw something else off. So what we actually want to do if we're going to do oral is we want to do a B complex, which adds all the B vitamins.
Okay.
And then additionally add B12. At a higher dose so that you don't deplete your other B vitamins and that you can boost up the B12 and have better energy and it will help with gut health and everything else. So that's one option. The second option for those who are like, okay, interesting, is you can get B12 injections. Now, if you don't like needles, by all means, you can go with the B complex and the B12 I find it's 50-50 when I'm talking to my clients. So I like to just share both of their options. With the B12 shots, they put like a cocktail in it. There's all kinds of different good things in it. But I find one over the course of every week for 4 to 6 weeks will build the levels up quickly. People notice a bigger, faster shift in energy. So you can ask your doctor for a prescription for B12, and or there's a lot of health clinics that you can share your test result, your number with them, and say, I'd like to get a round of B12 shots. Usually you don't have to do anything further than that. So like a integrative medicine clinic or something like that. So you can, most people are able to source that, but if not, we can do the B complex with the B12. And then essentially what you do is take one B complex with breakfast. You always have to take Bs with food. Otherwise it can give you nausea and your pee's going to be bright yellow, but that's normal because the B vitamins are very like bright. If you see the B complex capsule, it's like orange.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
do you have certain brands that you prefer all these things, the D's, the B's, just to make it easy for listeners who are like, there's so many. I don't know what to take.
Well, the thing is because I live in Canada, there's so many different brands in the States, and a lot of brands are pulling out of Canada because our government's horrible and they're trying to essentially ban supplements and like make companies have to spend millions of dollars to update their labels because they're essentially labeling supplements as like dangerous here, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So there's many different brands in Canada versus the United States. I can tell you, I really like Life Extension. That's one of the companies that does all the blood work and testing that is available except for Massachusetts and New York. So they have a beautiful line of supplements. So I really like Life Extension for supplementation, the B's, the D's, the DHA, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then I like Nature Made. Thorn is another good brand.
I like Thorn. Yeah. I remember
Garden of Life. Like those are some of my favorites. Mega Food.
Oh, yeah.
I try to pick the ones that are more like they don't put fillers and things like it. If you can help it, I don't suggest buying your vitamins at Costco or like a really big box store because they're putting a bunch of garbage in your vitamins and you're just spending money on stuff that isn't really going to work. So do you want to do the B complex with the B12? And we do drops for the B12. Sure. Okay.
Oh, there's drops?
For the B12, yeah.
Yeah, I would do drops, just not a shot.
Okay.
So the
B complex, one with breakfast. Daily, I'll put a link in there for that, and then I always put links, and then you can get this or something similar from wherever you shop locally or online.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's always I find drops are the easiest to do for the B12. So that's everything that is going on vitamin nutrient wise that can impact the C-reactive protein.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like what we've been continuing to talk about. Everything is so connected, right?
Right.
So, when we start to uncover these deficiencies, hence the thorough testing, this is when we start to be able to go, okay, you know, no wonder the C-reactive protein's off, or no wonder, well, that's why I'm curious to see your cortisol, because often when the cortisol is elevated or too low, it'll make it easier to burn through magnesium, D, B12, all that stuff.
Okay? Right. Okay.
So any questions about that before we go to the rest of the tests?
No.
Okay. So that's everything on that page. I just want to make sure I don't miss anything. I know we're going to go to the B or the progesterone and estrogen right away. Mm-hmm. I think I covered everything else.
Okay.
Other than that, if I didn't and I missed something, just let me know. But yeah, so progesterone, remind me, you're taking HRT, you're taking estrogen, progesterone as well, correct?
Yeah. I do a cream. I go to a natural place, so I do the biodynamic. I do a cream of estradiol.
Yeah.
And testosterone. And then I actually take 200 milligrams in like capsules of progesterone before I go to bed.
Great.
I don't stay asleep.
Yeah. And I think like you're saying, you feel a lot better once you've gotten these because likely you probably had quite the deficiencies before. I'd be curious to see what your labs were like before you started doing these things, right? Because it was probably quite low.
Oh, yeah.
So what I find for postmenopausal, like, and this is where we don't just want to go by the ranges because postmenopausal says less than 0.5 is normal.
Okay.
Your progesterone's a 17. So you're showing up in like a luteal phase range with your progesterone. But to me, we don't want to be really depleted even at postmenopausal or going through menopause or perimenopause. We want to, you know, keep levels balanced. So I think what you're doing is very helpful, especially since you've felt an improvement with your symptoms and you're feeling more optimal. So that's a really good place to be.
Oh, so good.
So 17.2, if I'd be concerned if you were taking all this and you were in less than 0.5, I would be like, what is going on? Your body is not absorbing any of it. So that's very positive and very healthy. The one thing with estrogen that we always want to make sure of is that the estrogen isn't too high. Because through elevated inflammation, candida overgrowth, different things like that, it can really shoot the estrogen high. So we want to rule out what's called estrogen dominance or high estrogen. So it's good. You don't have that issue. It's not going on. So with your estrogen, you are at a 28. So you're actually a bit deficient.
Oh, really? Well, I'm seeing my, so I go through this place called Hormonally Balanced and they're fabulous. And I'm seeing the practitioner via telehealth on Saturday.
So here's the thing though for you, because every body's a bit different, right? So it's like, if you're sleeping well, if your sex drive's good, you don't have vaginal dryness and your mood feels pretty stable and you're not having hot flashes or breast tenderness or anything like that. Well, maybe that is the sweet spot for you, but you may want to just play around with and see if you're at optimal now, or, you know, to get her perspective on that, because even though you're postmenopausal, being that you're taking, I would expect it to be higher. So this is where your cortisol reading will come in, because if the adrenal glands get depleted of producing cortisol, you're going to steal other sex hormones to convert into cortisol, including potentially estrogen or progesterone or both, or testosterone as well. So this is where we just want to see that and make sure that your adrenals aren't stealing any of this estrogen that the HRT and your body are trying to use to help you like be optimal. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And then your sex hormone binding globulin is also really good. You're at a 63.
Okay. Really What's good. That mean? What's a sex binding?
It's not something I really read often, but it's to help produce your sex hormones. So that's when you can talk to her more about, but primarily like testosterone's amazing. DHEA could come up a little bit. Progesterone's beautiful. The estrogen's good considering probably how deficient you were, but you can play around with that. And we want to bring the C-reactive protein down. We want to bring, your teeth, your thyroxin.
Yes, I was about to say, I almost forgot about my thyroid stuff.
Yes, okay. Thank you for bringing it up. Oh, yeah, and the TSH is in the smaller text. I was like, where's your TSH? okay, so when I had gone in and looked at your previous lab for TSH, it was in the twos. Now it's a 1.79. So we do want to monitor this, because what a lot of people don't realize is your pituitary produces thyroid-stimulating hormone. And if we have too much of it in the body, and I know you're not having these symptoms, but hair loss, cold hands and feet, eyebrow thinning, no hunger signal, no appetite feeling ever, weight gain, troubles losing weight, constipation, these are all signs that there's too much TSH being flooded through the body, and that's hypothyroid. Now, with Hashimoto's, we usually see a hypothyroid picture because it starts with hypothyroid and then it turns into Hashimoto's. So underactive thyroid and then Hashimoto's. So the good news is you're at a 1.79, but I don't want to see that go up anymore, because I find it's once we go above this into the twos that we start to see some of those symptoms. And we just want to make sure.
Do I have Hashimoto's? That's where I'm confused.
Well, we need to see your antibodies. So what a lot of people don't realize is the only way to confirm a Hashimoto's imbalance or diagnosis is you have to test for the thyroid globulin antibodies.
Okay.
So until we see the actual antibody test, that's what's going to tell us. And if it's more than 20, if it's more than 100, obviously, like, then there's definitely a Hashimoto's picture going on. But for most women, they're in an underactive thyroid, which is high TSH and too low of T3 and T4. So your thyroid produces T3 and T4, but the pituitary produces the TSH. Your thyroid produces more T4 and it converts into T3. So if you have low T4, chances are you have low T3. And if you have a low of both of those or one of them, it will contribute to the same underactive symptoms.
So what is the T4 is there too, right? Like, what are those numbers?
Yes. So free thyroxin is the T4. It's really low. T3 and T4 produced by the thyroid, those are not antibody level. So the test that we've been trying to figure out how to, for you to get, the antibody test, that's the one that tells us if you have Hashimoto's.
Right. Okay? So what are otherwise, these numbers right now telling you?
So like I've been saying, if TSH is too high and or if T3 and T4 are too low, that is indicative of hypothyroid, which is underactive, sluggish.
So right now I have the hypothyroid.
Well, I can't diagnose you, but what I can say is that your T4 is too low and you're showing signs of hypothyroid. So that means trouble losing weight would definitely be part of that. For a lot of women, like I said, it's constipation, lack of hunger signal. So this is where I find with medication, medication is needed for Hashimoto's, but we can reduce the antibodies and naturally support the thyroid. However, ideally, I would like to see a T3 reading because that's going to help give us more information if it's depleted as well. And then the antibodies will tell us 100% if there's a Hashimoto's going on or not. But yeah, so the troubles losing weight could definitely, to me, be the low T4 as well as the elevated C-reactive protein so far that we've seen. Yeah.
So I can improve the C-reactive protein from all the things we talked about. But what about the thyroid part of it?
So I want to wait until we have the rest of the picture before I give recommendations, just because it's going to be dictated by the antibody number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. But you need to get the inflammation down with the C-reactive protein to help your thyroid. Because any kind of inflammation suppresses the thyroid, right? So you have all this chronic C-reactive protein inflammation in your blood.
Right.
So we want to get that down to help the thyroid function better.
Oh.
Less inflammation, thyroid can more easily produce the T3 and T4. We'll see where your cortisol is at, because that's also like the cortisol and the thyroid are like best friends. So if cortisol's off, it can really inhibit thyroid function. So we'll see. It's moderate to minor imbalances that by shifting them, you'll feel a lot better. And it's preventative. Like, you wouldn't want elevated C-reactive protein for the next 10 plus years. It's going to increase your risk of stuff you don't want to get. Right.
Yeah,
but here's the key to advocate for the testing to see what's going on so you can take the steps. This is how we prevent versus blindly being in fear of, oh my gosh, I'm afraid this is going to happen. Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to have this. It's like, we'll be proactive then.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll be, it'll be fine. I'd be shocked if it stayed elevated. Yeah, I'd be shocked. But there's things that we have to deal with, like I was talking about earlier, that as we pick through them.
Right.
Ideally, it'd be good to test your C-reactive protein again in a few months to see that it's, now that we have a baseline, that it's going down and it's not going up anymore.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And that'll take a while, though. Or is it only a few? Even if
No, C-reactive protein will take probably about a year.
Oh, really? Okay.
I just like to be realistic. And then if it takes less time, it's like a bonus rather than like, it'll be a week. You'll be good to go. And it's like, no.
Oh, okay.
It'll take some time. And the cortisol will also dictate kind of that as well. But yeah, just to be safe, a year, if it's less, amazing.
Okay.
Well, so you're healthy.
Yeah. It sounds like everyone needs to go and get their C-reactive protein tested.
Yes, very important.
Very least,
it is.
Right?
And age doesn't mean anything. I've had clients in their 20s have elevated C-reactive protein. Really? Their 30s, 10, 15, 20, like very concerning levels.
Wow.
So we don't want to listen to the, you're too young, or you have to be in a certain age range, you have to be a senior. No.
I can take things. I can do things. I'm not helpful, right?
And totally. And the self-care, the nervous system regulation, right? Like all the things we've been talking up to this point of going through results, it all accumulates to really help the body regulate. So make sure your bowels are moving, stay hydrated, lots of good nourishing food, use your self-care practices.
This is great. How do we find you? Tell us all the way.
Yeah, you can go to amberproof.ca. If you're wondering if you're struggling with emotional eating, you can take the free quiz. If you want to go through 3-minute complimentary consultation, the link is there to do that. I'm happy to talk to you about all these tests and ways we can do them and get you the answers and work on a lot more. And help you feel confident about your health and your body and that we can be proactive. I think that's the biggest key. Proactivity is your superpower. So are you willing to dig in and get the answers and then take the steps to course correct?
Exactly. Well, I am, Amber.
Yes.
No, thank you. Keep coming. I appreciate it. Everybody, keep coming back to Health Power. Rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. Thanks so much.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis, MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.